I'm not the type to have a formal speech ready or a full, and I'd like to thank the gentleman who spoke just before we did. When I was sitting there, a lot of the words that he stated in regards to the Jesuits triggered a lot of things for me. The oppression for our people began as early as the 12 and 1300s with the Jesuits coming to North America or Turtle Island. And when they arrived here, they started making notes. And those notes became letters back home. Those letters back home described our ancestors, our women, our givers of life, our nurturers, our title holders to this land, as women having no sexual morals, they're there for the taking. And that's the earliest from our recorded history, our shared recorded history, that we're told the abuse, annihilation, the rape of our women, of our people began. And it was with those letters that were sent home, more or less stating there was no reason to have any respect for any of us indigenous women over here. And more so to the fact that they were able to understand that as indigenous women, as the title holders to this vast territory, that land is our responsibility, as well as all aspects of life are. And in saying that, when those people first come over, they seen the vast amounts of supposedly unused lands. They couldn't understand their language. They couldn't understand our ceremonies. They acknowledged our government, which is the Gaina-Lagoa, the great law of peace. And that great peace, common fact, that it's the oldest form of democracy that exists in the world. Nobody else can boast that but the Ongahoy of North America, of Turtle Island. And they recognized that early on, too. Everything we needed to define ourselves as a nation, our language, our shared or common culture, our title to that land, we all had it. And there was also something, too, and that was our willingness to defend our territory. That was found right within our own constitution, the great law. All of that was there. And those first people who arrived, those Jesuits, they sent letters back. And pretty soon there was a law that was created across the waters called the Doctrine of Discovery, meaning those newcomers were coming over here to take over that land, to take over this territory. Anybody who opposed that was subject to holy war. And they used that religion to justify, like I said, the rape, the annihilation of all our men, women, and children of our nations. And for hundreds of years that carried on. And in this so-called free and democratic society that the commercial world calls North America and Canada, the United States, they found new and innovative, polite ways to annihilate our people through things called residential schools, having their own governmental system set up called the Children's Aid Society, who even to this day apprehend our children right from schools. And there's just so many aspects, you know, of what's happened to our people here on Turtle Island that we need to educate ourselves about. And in saying that, for some of us, like that level of awareness comes sooner than others, and it all come to a head February 28th of this year here in Canada. Myself, my family's been, we've suffered a lot of traumas through these different governmental policies, the residential school syndrome. My sister and my cousin are both here with me today, and our mothers were victims of that process. And as young as we are, as young as our children are, we're all motherless, and our children are without their grandmothers. And so we've had no choice, you know, but to learn at very early ages how to defend ourselves how to protect each other. And that awareness grew more once we became mothers. So back in February, there is development happening really close to our territory. Well, technically it's on our territory, but right in our own backyards. And what was happening was the government of Canada passed a law called the Places to Grow Law, where they're going to plan on bringing in 4 million people into this certain area, right in the middle of our, right in the heart of our territory. The majority of that land was under claim by our people, and despite that, and a recent Supreme Court of Canada ruling stating that they needed to consult with the people who have claims against that land. That claim doesn't have to be approved as long as there's an indigenous nation making a claim to that land. They have to be notified when there's development of any type taking place, and that never happened. But on February 28th, after months and months of meeting, community meetings, consultations, a small group of us decided, you know, enough is enough. And after all the trauma we had been through, and realizing the social and the economical and environmental impact it was going to have on our children and grandchildren, you know, some of us women were at the point where we just said no more. You know, my own children, you know, when I was 3 years old, like I said, my mother, she was a victim of the residential school process. She committed suicide while her and I were at home when I was 3 years old. And it really opened my eyes after I had my own children, having to explain to them why they don't have that connection with their grandmother. And about 4 years ago, one of my aunts, somebody really close to my sisters and my brother and I, she was raped and murdered by a non-Native man. And she became one of the 500 missing and murdered Aboriginal women in Canada that the government's doing absolutely nothing about. You know, what difference does it make another dead Indian woman? And for them, it's a good thing. In their eyes, they see that as a really positive thing. That's one less woman to have, Ongahoy woman to have children. Because we are the givers of life. We are the ones that are bringing these children, these men and women, up to teach them, you know, who they are and what their responsibilities are. But realizing the full impact that having that development happen right at our doorstep was going to have on our families, we went there 5:30 in the morning and decided, you know, we're going to go there and we're going to stay. That's our territory. Our law, the Gainalagoa, the great law, is the supreme law of this land. That law was in existence in here, fully functioning, before any European ever stepped foot on this territory. And at no point did we say we relinquish our sovereignty. Our law no longer exists. We're subject to yours. At no point has that ever happened. And it's common fact that every war that's happened here on this soil, we fought as allies with the British, with the French, and that alliance has always been there. And for them to create this law, I call it a corporate law. You know, some people go to school to study business, but corporate law is alive and well in Canada and the U.S. because that's what it's all about, is maintaining those corporations. And for them to impose that corporate law on us and threaten us with their whole system, you know, that's unacceptable. And some of us are aware of that. And it's not like we're resisting anything. We're standing up for who we are. We're standing up for our own rights. And we're doing that all under our own law. And a lot of people get confused, you know, and say we're protesting this or we're resisting that. But the fact is we're living our lives according to what the Creator, the laws and the ways that He gave us. And from what I've been taught and told, like, there's no greater law than that. But so we've been there now for almost 9 months, and during that time, as we speak, we do have political prisoners. One of our men are incarcerated. We were able to get a few of them out But right now, there's well over 25 outstanding warrants for our people that have made that stand. And we're trying to find out ways, you know, like to have our law recognized and respected by Canada. And it's a struggle. Why? Because under that great law, that Guy in the Lagoa that we're raised under and that we live under, we can't carry weapons, and we don't. And we've been there for 9 months unarmed. And when we were raided on April 20th, when the OPPs come in armed and they beat our women, beat our children, used weapons on them, we were still unarmed. But that very same day, I seen something I never saw before in my life, and that was witnessing firsthand our law being implemented right on our own territory. You had the OPPs walking in with guns, and they were ready for war. They were ready to shoot and kill. That's what they're trained to do, to respond to violence and aggression with violence and aggression. And they did so. But under our way, we're taught to respond using our good minds and doing that peacefully. And we escorted them peacefully off our territory. And it was, to me, it was really amazing that we did maintain title and jurisdiction to that territory, implemented our law, and it was so much fun watching them. They were bewildered. They were afraid. They had no idea how to respond to that peace we showed them because they've never been a part of it. And at the same time, that is our responsibility under another agreement. It's called the Turo Wampum, the Guswenta. And that's us living side by side, never interfering with each other's affairs, governmental, political, anything. Just living side by side respectfully. And under that agreement, that's what had driven us that day. You know, like to remind them, not enforce our law on them, but to remind them whose land they were on and whose law they were here under. And it was successful. They haven't, you know, they've been harassing us. Helicopter flyovers, plane flyovers, frequent surveillance, things like that. And but we're still there, and we don't plan on leaving. And throughout this all, one of the biggest things for me is having my children become more aware. You know, because right now I'm seen as a really big threat. And that threat doesn't come because of this big, large gun I carry with me everywhere I go. It's because I, at some point in my life, I became aware of the truth of what's happening to our people. And I've had enough strength instilled in me because of what happened to my mother, to my aunties, to my grandmothers, to be able to stand up and speak on behalf of them because they can't be here today. They're no longer with us. So I speak for them too. And the struggle is for them and my children. And my children have seen that firsthand. They've seen the violence, the hatred, the discrimination that's carried in so many people's hearts. And at the same time, they've seen us respond with more strength than ever can be imaginable, I guess, with some people, and getting our word out there and getting our point across. But as far as all of the other things that are happening, you talk about justice. In our way, it's not our responsibility to seek justice. That comes with death, and that's something that we're not responsible for, because each individual is responsible for their own actions. But it is our responsibility to every day strive towards that great peace that I had mentioned. And it is our responsibility to pass on to our children that knowledge of that law, of that way of life, and to continue on with the existence of our nation, of our whole way as Ongahoy people. And that's what this is all about, is just reminding the world of who we are. You know, because for over 80 years now, Canada has told us, you don't exist, you're going to follow our law under the Indian Act. You're going to follow our political system. They removed our traditional governance in 1924. And at that point they said, from here on in, this is a system you will follow. And guess who Canada's sitting at the table talking now in regards to the land issues? The traditional governance. That's who all of the historical treaties and agreements have been made with. And they were forced during the last 9 months to sit down and talk with them. And hopefully Canada will uphold their end of that Gaswento Arturo and respect it as we've respected it right till this day. We've never violated it. But I think that's all I have to say. I was told 5 minutes ago, I got 2 minutes left, so.